It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited
by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus. Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
From Autosport.com and Autosport Magazine, I'm Martin Lee, and this is the Autosport Podcast. The 107th running of the Indianapolis 500 was nothing short of spectacular, with Joseph Newgarden clinching his first ever Indy 500 victory. In a heart-stopping climax, he executed a last-lap overtake on Marcus Ericsson to take the checkered flag. But it wasn't without its share of controversy and drama on Sunday afternoon. Three red flags because of various crashes and a pretty frightening incident with Felix Rosenquist and Kyle Kirkwood. We'll discuss all those incidents, the winners, the losers, the contentious finish that has everyone talking today. We'll delve into Ericsson's complaints about how the race ended. Does Formula One have any influence on IndyCar in terms of the show they put on? And any safety concerns I've seen floating around on the internet with super speedway racing just so quick these days? I'm joined on the podcast today by two experts, our global editor-in-chief at motorsport.com, Charles Bradley, and good friend of the podcast, motorsport writer Mandy Curry. Thank you both for joining us. Charles, what with Monaco Grand Prix and Indianapolis 500, it kind of kept running one of the world's biggest motorsport websites. It kind of kept you busy.
It certainly did. It's maybe a good thing that the Coke 600 in Charlotte got rained off, because it's just it's happening as we're recording this right now.
Well, I watched the first about 30 minutes of filler from that, because it was about 11 p.m. UK time, and blessed, they were doing the best job they could on Fox, but it was clear it was not going to happen. So about maybe midnight, I just turned it off and like, it's fine. So I don't need to watch more racing. If only Le Mans had been scheduled early for the same weekend, that's what you would have really wanted, you know?
It was almost 24 hours, wasn't it, in all, probably?
It really was. And Mandy, you join us from Indianapolis, so close to the track that you were saying before we hit record, you can even hear all the action from the tannoy and things like that. It's got to be amazing to be there in person.
Oh, it's so amazing. There's just nothing like the people, the vibe, everything, people, the hospitality. Just people will give you, open their arms and give you endless drinks and endless food.
Sounds good.
Sounds like heaven to me.
It is.
See you this time next year. So, Charles, fill us in on why some people have found it a controversial end to the Indy 500.
Yeah, it was quite a strange one, wasn't it? At the time, obviously, Marcus Ericsson complained a little bit about the way that the race finished. And the fact was, the race finished with a checkered flag, an actual race to the finish line. And I think what it did, it tripped a few people into their Abu Dhabi 2021 conspiracy theory world. And they compared it directly to that, which I think is just nonsense, basically. I mean, unless you believe in JFK, the moon landings being staged, and 9/11 was all a fix. I mean, it's just ridiculous, really. Of course, Roger Penske, team owner, happens to own Indianapolis Motor Speedway. He owns actually the series as well. But, you know, when he took all those responsibilities on, the stewardship of the facility, he jettisoned all his immediate connection with his race team. So he used to call strategy for one of the drivers, many of his drivers, you know, famously Helio Castroneves. And he let all that go. I even saw somebody saying, yeah, but he was wearing a Team Penske headset on the pagoda. It was like, yeah, he was just listening to team radio. Any fan can take a scanner and listen to the radio of their choice. Obviously, he was listening to Joseph Newgarden's radio. Doesn't mean he's on the phone to race control saying, yes, one more lap, make sure my driver can win. That's just, there's no way on earth that happened. You know, Roger, he's a multi-billionaire, but he's in motorsport for all the right reasons. He's been coming to the Indy 500 since 1951. You know, this is the 72nd time he'd been at the track, basically. And obviously he wants to win. He's set his team a target of, you know, basically them winning 20 BorgWarner trophies before he, you know, he likes to retire, pops his clogs, whichever comes first, I guess. And he's up to 19, which is a staggering feat. But it's done through the whole ethos of sportsmanship. He doesn't want to buy victory. If you wanted him to buy victory, he'd buy every team in the pit lane, wouldn't he? And ensure he won every single year. So he wants to win it fair and square. And anybody who suggests otherwise, I think they just need to give their heads a wobble.
And it was just because that last red flag came so late. Some would say maybe a lap too late. They could have red flagged it immediately and given the cars more than just that flying lap they had at the end. But yeah, three red flags occurred during the race because of various crashes. Mandy, what do you think the impact of those interruptions on the race did to things like the momentum of what we were watching and even driver strategies as well? Because it was a little bit stop-start at times.
When it comes to the biggest oval of the year, it's just, it's so hard to predict. Just like this, you don't know what's going to happen. And anything, any red flag, any yellow, whatever, could ruin all your progress. And then your strategy is completely shot when this happens, the red flags. So,
well, should we go through those red flags kind of in order then? And let's go that frightening crash between Rosenquist and Kyle Kirkwood. Mandy, how did you read that one?
We're going so fast and at the touch of something, and then the car is flipped over and then that wheel's off. And it, by the way, that did hit a car in the parking lot.
Yeah, so I saw some pictures subsequently. That was the frightening bit, was where you see, you know, because it is oval racing and it does feel like the safety's on a knife edge sometimes. And when that wheel flew off and there was just that one camera shot, and they cut away from that camera shot, and the last thing we saw was just this wheel heading into the crowd. No, nobody was hurt. It did hit a car.
Right.
And it was fine. But it could have been a lot worse. But also, it's oval racing and the speeds are so high.
It's very different when you are in an F1 race and you bump the tire and then someone spins off in the gravel, right? This is something completely different. You're being hit at high speeds on an oval to where the car will flip over. The car will get grated against the fence with just a slight hit. And that's the allure quotation marks, but that's what makes it so dangerous. That's also what makes it so exciting. And but it's scary. No, everybody in the media center, we all stopped. We all were like, because it's scary.
When you see a car upside down, Charles, how did you read that one? I watched, they published the onboard afterwards as well. And as he's going along the safer barrier upside down, he opens his visor. And I'm like, keep that closed for a start. He's like, what's going on? I'm upside down. What's happening here? How did you read that one?
Well, fortunately, he's got an aero screen, so he had a little bit of protection ahead of the visor, if you see what I mean. When I saw the crash, I didn't even see the car flipped. I was watching the wheel see where it went. And then to see the crowd physically ducking because it was that close to going into the grandstand, which would have had some horrific consequences. And yeah, it hit some poor lady's white Chevy Cruze, and she had to get it towed home, apparently.
The compensation from the racetrack will probably be okay. I think the insurance will cover it.
Act of God, just come under that, you know, lap of the gods or something like that. It fell from the heavens.
It's a hell of a call to make it to your insurance company. It's like, I'd like to make a claim, please. What happened? An IndyCar wheel hit my car and stoved the front end in.
Yeah, I need to check the fine print on my insurance. But yeah, go into the crash itself. I mean, it was very innocuous at the beginning, wasn't it? Where Joseph had just gone around the outside of Felix. He got in the wrong part of the aero wake, but you know, the aero wash, a bit like it was very sort of Top Gun moment, wasn't it? Where you get in the jet washer, the F-18 in front of you, and then suddenly you lose all control for a second. And just very unfortunate the way he broke the rear toe link first. So it did that sort of forklift truck maneuver where it suddenly spun around and then it broke the steering arm. So he suddenly had no control on the right side of his car. So now he's just looking for a safe haven to have the rest of his accident. And then as soon as it hit the apron, the car bottomed out and spat him back onto the race surface. So, you know, spun him back onto the track. Mm. Then it's, again, lap of the gods, whether you're going to get a car or not coming along. And I was in Long Beach a couple of weeks ago talking to Romain Grosjean about a crash he had at Texas, because he likes crashing at turn two at every race Overly goes to. And he's describing it in perfect detail about what's happened, how it's caused, and how he hit the fence, stuff like that. And then he got to the point of where he was talking about going back across the track, and he just stopped talking and just pulled a face. and they know that's the really sketchy part of a wreck like that. And we saw the consequence of what happens. You know, Kyle, I'm sure, thought he'd missed it. You know, he had Ferrucci right in front of him. He was trying to check up. He, you know, the corner of his eye, knew the car, Felix was coming up, but he thought, I've made this. And then suddenly, you know, he's on his lid and turning turtle.
And on the restart, a move by Pato O'Ward, it just looks to me like he went to the inside, maybe hit the dirt a little bit, and then just lost control. But again, an accident all on his own, but just that instant spin. And then again and again and again and again, he hits the barrier, and it's like, my goodness me, because the circuit's so big and this, your mind plays a trick that you don't think the cars are going as fast as they are. When they wreck like that, you think, oh, my goodness me, that was... lucky that he didn't do any more than just mount the barrier that he did.
Absolutely. It's a late move and it's one he'll want to take back. I think there was echoes of what happened on the last lap here last year when he had a run on Ericsson on the outside of turn one, decided not to take it, and then he effectively lost him the race because the toe wasn't as strong last year. This time, I don't know why he was going for it quite that early. I thought it was a couple of laps too early to... pull a huge bomb move like that, because it needed the other driver to be in full accordance with what was coming next. And Marcus did what a lot of drivers would do. He just pulled down, took his normal line, squeezed Pato. Pato clipped the grass, clipped Marcus, who did a fantastic save to keep himself in the race. But then, Pato spun wildly. When you've got that head-on shot into turn three, the cars look really slow, don't they? It's a real optical illusion. And it's weird. If you stand on the inside of the corners, you're quite a long way away from the cars, and they look slow in real life, sort of metronomic, sort of zooming past. Whereas if you stand on the outside the corner, it's mind-blowing just how quickly they are going. Suddenly it's like, yes, they are doing 220 miles an hour because it was here and now it's gone. Yeah. Kind of thing. And then when you hit the wall, that's when the explosion happens. You ride the fence and you get run into by Agustin Canapino. Just, I don't know what was going on.
Why? What? I didn't follow up on that one. What happened with that? It just looked like he had no control or just decided not to brake. Or I need to follow up on that. Like, why did he run into the back of it?
I didn't get to the bottom of that. It's almost like I watched one replay and it looked like he was looking down a little bit in the cockpit. I just don't think he saw Pato because it was a black car. And he'd been in his accident. He probably didn't know there'd been another one in front of him, so he probably just didn't see him till he suddenly ran into the back of him. It was
quite a big impact as well. Yep. And then Mandy on the next restart, there was just chaos in the mid pack, wasn't there? I did try and write down who was involved if I missed someone. So it was Lundgaard, Carpenter, Pedersen, Graham Rahal, who'd had a stinker anyway because he not stalled, but I think it was a battery issue on the on the grid.
When he was trying to get on the grid,
I think it was battery problems. Anyway, so he's got two laps down. And Marco Andretti. So that was just, I don't know, Mandy, how you read that. That to me, it's like over-exuberance, another restart. Everyone was just jockeying for position. And then it was just... all hell broke loose.
I mean, they were like four wide, right?
Yeah.
At the press conference, I asked TK and Santino about the driving. Is it too aggressive? And what were their thoughts on that? And of course, they were like, "Well, it's Indy. It's the Indy 500. It's a tight field. You have to go all in, and you have to leave it. You have to leave it out there." So, especially on a restart, that's what TK said. You're going to go for it. And that's what happened. That's exactly what you happened. You have all drivers going for it, all or nothing. And then you go four wide, and that's what happens. You have drivers just taking no risks. And by the way, you can when you're back there, right? Also, double points. No more double points. So if you mess up, it's not going to hit you double, right? So why not go for it? That's the gamble that drivers take. It makes them aggressive, but that's also coming from two drivers who did fairly well. Like Santino said, you know, I made a three wide pass into one twice, like, right? And he was proud of that. And that's something that's an aggressive move. But he's also got P2. But then when you go and you talk to drivers who it did not work out for, Marcus Ericsson has a different tune. But Marcus made this kind of did a similar move last year with the Dragon Weaving. But it is what it is. It's a restart. It doesn't matter, cold tires or whatever. It's a restart. I don't think it matters. It's a restart, and people are going to go all for it, and that's what happened.
Well, there's no tire warmers anyway. No, okay. So I know that a lot of racing in the US is perhaps in warmer climates than over here in Europe, and tire warmers have been a big issue around Le Mans. They're staying this year, at least for the 24 hours race, and it's a big issue in Formula One as well. But maybe we'll talk about tire warmers a little bit later, because it's a strange, I think a strange hill to die on for the regulators. I think there's other ways you can go about greening up motor racing rather than not warming up some rubber. But there we go.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Let's talk a little bit about Joseph Newgarden's victory. Charles, his first Indy 500 victory and a last lap overtake on Marcus Ericsson to do it. Just talk a little bit about Newgarden's journey to get his first Indianapolis win, and maybe about even a better strategy that you saw him play out during the race as well.
Yeah, I thought he was very impressive right from the get-go, starting that far back, worked his way through, was very patient, didn't really pull any outrageous moves that would have risked any, you know, damage to his car. And then he sort of got himself into the whole lead conversation and that battle at the front. One thing I thought was quite an interesting stat. It's only the third time in history the Indy 500 has been decided with a last lap pass. You know, the guy's two-time champion, 12th attempt at the Indy 500. So, you know, a lot of people were asking him the question, why haven't you won this race before? You're a money, no object team in Penske. Success is expected. You know, he'd finished third with Ed Carpenter Racing, one of the smaller teams, but with a good reputation here. His best with Penske before today was fourth in 2019. Tim Sindrick, who's the team president at Penske, actually apologized to Roger and Joseph that it had been so long since they'd won the race or given him the chance of the race. But you know, afterwards Joseph just said it was, you know, indescribable, you know, just his journey through the sport, you know, starting when he was just 13 years old in karting, which, you know, for a European person, that's actually quite late, isn't it, really? first Tennessee driver to win the Indy 500 as well. And yeah, it was a great moment in his career. And I think it's probably one of those moments that really puts a double underline under your name as a real true IndyCar champion.
He talked a lot about his mentality. The way he approached it was very carefree. He said he normally studies a lot for a race, you know, and he didn't. He goes, I didn't even study this time. I just went in relaxed and carefree. I also asked him, is it different? Because he's a two-time champion, you know, winning a championship versus the 500. Does it feel different? And you know what? I think it was pretty telling that he said no, that it just feels like a weight has been lifted. And I think that just is a testament to kind of what Charles was saying about at Penske, you're expected to win. And he has been under so much pressure to win the 500. And I think he's just finally like feels free. I think it is, you know, it's been, he did approach it very differently. And it's almost like he was just like, oh, I can breathe now. And to bring it home for Chevy, by the way, for Chevy as well, you know, not just Penske, but Chevy, to have like a Chevy driver, because the Hondas have been dominating that. And Rinus had taken out Pelot, we'll never know, right? But it, in that pit, now, you know, they're back. And, you know, even Rossi was saying that he feels like it's a Chevy, you know, like it was a Chevy versus kind of CGR coming into the 500. So between these engine manufacturers. But yeah, I just think overall for Joseph, he was very, very pleased. You know, he actually, someone asked him a question about his wife and he actually teared up. You could just tell just the amount of strain and stress it has been for him to win this race and to finally win it. He just said it's been hard on his wife as well, obviously, you know, his biggest supporter. And he teared up and he was like, I don't even know why I'm crying, but he cried. And it was, and you could, like I said, it's just finally, you know,
that sense of relief, just get it, like, let's just get it done. And then that's it. It's a huge moment in his life. But for every moment of heaven, there's moments of hell. Marcus Ericsson's complaints about the way that the race ended, why it didn't end under a yellow. We've seen races end under a yellow with many more laps to go than we had on Sunday afternoon. Didn't Takuma Sato win a couple of years? When was that when he won? There was like 2020. 7 or 8. Quite a few laps to go. Charles, what do you think about Ericsson's thoughts about how the race finished?
I think he had 2 points. I think the 2 points he made was that he felt it was unfair. And I think when you look at that word, it's unfair because it was to him, right?
Yeah.
So if those last laps ran under yellow, he'd won the race. He's a back-to-back Indy 500 winner. Great. But, you know, if you flip the script, Joseph would have said the same. Well, it wasn't fair. He didn't try and restart the race. He didn't follow your rule set that say we will always try and finish on the green to try and get to a checkered flag. So that's the point for me. It's only unfair to the person who feels wronged by it, you know. And you've got people asking, a bit like mentioned earlier about Abu Dhabi 2021. This time you've got people saying, well, why didn't IndyCar follow its rule to finish under green? Well, it did.
Yes,
so you can't win, Martin. You can't please everyone because some people just seem very intent on being not happy.
I know.
So, yes, it's unfair, but it's unfair to Marcus, and it would have been unfair to Joseph if they hadn't tried to restart the race. And all they did was follow their own rules, which says we will try and restart the race as long as it's safe to do so. And they felt it was safe to do so. And this brings me to my other word that Marcus used, which was it was dangerous. So, and it would have been if, when they charged at turn one and the green flag waved, if they'd all charged into the turn one and each car had flown into the barrier because they were on all tires that weren't warm enough, then he would have had a point, but they didn't. So he's not got that either. So I think as much as I like Marcus, I think he's a really good guy, and he's obviously talking in the heat of the moment there, I think that both of his points sort of fall a little bit hollow for me, really, because I felt worried when it happened. I certainly had safety concerns. I didn't think that one out lap was enough We see this all the time when people come into the pits and put new tyres on, but they're new tyres. They're fresh tyres. They got a ton of grip. You can get to, by the time you got to turn one, they're absolutely good to go. These cars had a couple of heat cycles put through them because of the stop-start nature of that final sort of 15 laps. So, yes, it sort of did feel like it could have been a risky thing for them to do, but I think their gamble paid off. We got a race that finished with a checkered flag rather than the yellow one, and you had 350,000 people, you know, happy that they'd seen the race that they'd paid good money for.
You know, he'd only just taken the lead anyway from Newgarden before the yellows came out, so it was just timing within a few minutes of being unfair. And then, so unfair, no, unsafe. There's a great Martin Brundle cliche, which I've not heard him wheel out in a long time, actually, but he's used it on many occasions. I really like it. And it's that the throttle pedal goes in both ways. You don't just have to go flat chat. As a job as a driver, you have to drive within what that vehicle can do. And if the tyres are old and cold, you have to drive according to what the vehicle can do. So, you can't go absolutely all out in that situation. Mandy, what do you think about the role of race officials in making these kind of decisions? Do they get it right this weekend?
I think Charles is now American now because with his
hang on, this is news.
Hang on a minute. He's been there long enough.
With his take on this, we've had Indy 500s, the greatest race in the world, end on yellows, right? So I had this platform, this major platform of this is how it is, this is how it is, this is what IndyCar does. And then IndyCar does this. Ends the race this way, this time. I'm conflicted, like I was conflicted in Abu Dhabi, because you don't want the big, like I was talking to Callum earlier today and I asked him about this and Callum said, well, you don't want, nobody wants to end this race on a yellow. Nobody does. Or, you know, everybody wants to end it in an exciting way because it's entertaining and it's the biggest race. And I understand that. So I struggle because I think it could have, but like in the past, they did it with Takuma and Dixon, and Takuma, that's how Takuma won his. And Dixon was like, yep, you know, it happened this way. It ended this way in the yellow. Talking about like the tinfoil on your head and everything. I have a theory. I think Vice was there. 100 Days to Indy docuseries.
So I wonder, it's a scripted reality show.
I'm wondering. Okay.
That's a new one.
This is now WWE wrestling that we all have to believe that the wrestling is real, but it's all scripted. I don't buy it.
I'm joking.
No, I know you are.
But just to bring it back home, you won a chance. And that's what this gave the drivers a chance. It gave them a chance. Unfortunately, Marcus lost out. But this is tough racing. This is the Indy 500. And the Indy, anything can happen. And anything and anything just did happen. So
this is where sport is entertainment. And
yes,
some people forget that this isn't the Olympics. This isn't the most pure example of people coming together to do sport. No. It's like when people say sport and politics don't mix. Mm-hmm. And sorry, you can't pull those two things apart. And it's sport and entertainment intertwined, because sport is entertainment. Purists, I get, would say do the right thing. So if it means finishing under a yellow, everyone poodles round. If that's the right thing, then do the right thing.
Right.
Don't pander to the show. But again, then there is that assumption that, hang on, that we are almost pandering to a show. And as Charles said, well, it's not. No rules are broken. It's very clear. They'll do everything they can to finish under a green. And it's exactly what they did. They did what the stated aims that everyone in the sport has agreed to do.
Right.
So no rules. Not only were no rules broken, they were completely followed. And yet people are still outraged how it ended. I was going to bring this up a little bit later, but let's talk about it now. Both of you guys also cover Formula One in different ways. And so I want to talk about whether IndyCar is influenced by Formula One. It's had the Netflix effect. F1 has had an incredible few years, actually, with the battle between Lewis Hamilton and Max Verstappen, but also just the general rise of the popularity of that sport with a younger audience, with an American audience as well. And whether you feel that IndyCar, because I don't know enough about IndyCar, whether it feels an influence from Formula One and whether it feels that it almost has to then go to toe-to-toe with F1.
Clearly, you can't deny some kind of influence because it has the 100 Days Running, right? Docuseries. So it looked at F1, saw Drive to Survive and said, hey, we need that for our series, right? So there's some kind of influence there in that sense. Alex Pillow's strategists say, why can't we get the numbers? You're in media. Why can't we get that popularity that F1 has? What do we need to do? And I think there's a lot of that in terms of numbers, in terms of viewerships, in terms of people watching IndyCar. They are looking to F1 as like, how can we get that, if that makes sense? But I don't think for a second that F1 affects the racing on track. That does not affect the racing on track in IndyCar. And this incident that happened is not a reflection of that. It's a reflection of, you know, what we all just said. We're not going to rehash it. But I just think when it comes down to how to market to make IndyCar more marketable and things like that, I think that there is the F1 influence. And I think that's where it stays. And I think that's where it is. But only in that way.
In the, let's say, the early 1990s, I think IndyCar could really claim to be American Formula One. Certainly when Nigel Mansell came over, raced up against the Andretti's, you know, some fantastic drivers, Little Al, those guys who were around at the time. The racing was unbelievable. The racing was better than Formula One, in my opinion, at the time. They had different chassis. Obviously, they still had an engine war then. And it just really did feel like IndyCar could rival Formula One. And then IndyCar tore itself apart. It split itself in two. You had the Indy series. You had the kart series. They were at war for donkey's years between them. And finally, we've come back to a place where it's all diverged again and we've got one series again. But it just feels like it's American Formula 2 now. It's a spec series. We don't have different chassis. We still have an engine war, which I think probably elevates it slightly. But it just doesn't have that luster. And I think it needs to work a lot harder to get to where Alex Pillow's strategist wants it to be. You know, it needs to get better. I think it's in the right hands. I think it you know, there's the desire to get it there, but I think it's got a lot of work to do to catch up to where it was. And you know, I think what they threw away was a lot, basically, and they've got a heck of a job to get it on. But then again, you look at an event like the Indy 500 and it is so far elevated above any other race in that series, probably apart from Long Beach Grand Prix, that you can see why they were pushing straight after the race. Oh, we're racing downtown Detroit next week. You know, the effort is being put in. It's going to take them a long time to get back to where they were. But I just do feel it is that sort of American Formula 2 level, and they need it to get back to that American Formula 1, where you can compare the two. And I'm sure people would disagree with me on that, but that's that's how I feel. We've got some great storylines. You know, we touched on it earlier about the battle between Chevy and Honda, you know, two fantastic manufacturers really going head to head. They pour millions of dollars every year just finding these tiny little advantages over one another, and still managing to get to almost the same place. You know, it was fantastic to see a Chevy and a Honda duking it out over that final lap. And this year it was Chevy. Last couple of years it's been Honda. So there's stuff to build on there, but I still think it's quite a way short of Formula One and getting to those kind of levels.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At chumbacasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
And then the inevitable comparison, we've mentioned it a couple of times already on the podcast, to Abu Dhabi, with almost an engineered ending. I do see some comparison, and I know where it came from, and I know why people would make that, but I don't think that was particularly valid at all. And you know, and the and half the problem with Abu Dhabi, half the problem was Red Bull's reaction to that, which was they never at no point. And it's partly because the kind of team they are and the kind of boss Christian Horner is they never came out and said, well, we didn't deserve it, but we'll take it. And that's half the controversy around Abu Dhabi. It's just why there were two sets of fans that were so angry. If you think about Le Mans with the Toyota number 5 car when it was 2016, and that last lap, when it broke down on the last lap, a surefire win, the sister car garage were going mad, like celebrating. And you saw the team bosses just saying, calm down, stop it. And you think, well, it's a natural reaction when you're in competition, but they really had to stop those celebrations in the garage to be like, look, just be respectful. I think if Red Bull had just done that and at some point come out and been like, hey, we'll take that, go and have a fight with Michael Massey, but not necessarily didn't win it in the best way, but we won it. And they never said that. So I think half of the problem is to do with the way it was handled and then Mercedes bringing lawyers to the final race and all sorts. So, but I didn't like those two comparisons being drawn because I didn't have any problems with the way that the race ended. It was an interesting, final lap. That was good. Let's talk a little bit about just the performance of these cars, just the super speedway racing these days. Mandy, what do you think about some of the challenges that that are being faced by the teams, the engineers, the circuits, because these cars are just now so, so brutally fast. We'll get onto defensive driving in a minute, but we'll sort of kick off with safety. I didn't feel that safety was compromised. Obviously, that wheel flying off wasn't good, and I think we dodged, well, literally people dodged that one. But do you think there's anything that needs to be done about the way that it's just the increasing performance of these cars is being managed?
I think the safety team and everybody, the safety, the whole, all of it has come such a long way in IndyCar. And I think they've done such a phenomenal job, and including the safety team, because, the cool thing about the safety team is, I don't know if listeners know this, but they travel. It's one team. So that's a consistent team that travels around and does this. And that's important because, when you have random marshals who don't know where to go and don't know how to give you a fire extinguisher to put out in your Ferrari, like stuff like that. It's these people devote a lot of time and effort into safety. So I just want to say that IndyCar, that is one good thing about IndyCar. It is the thing about ovals. Ovals are unpredictable. They've come such a long way. We have the aero, we have the aero screen. We have things like that. And we have safety measures like that. But going at high speeds like that, literally anything could still happen. And that is the danger of an oval. This is why you have a lot of international or European drivers who won't do the ovals for this reason, because they are terrified of ovals. Grosjean was terrified of them. Now he's doing them. But, and he's still crashing out. So, yeah. What more can you do? The tires, you don't hear people complaining about the tire deck. And in terms of like they do with the Pirellis, because they have to be on such a high level. When you do this on an oval, that's everything. So there's that they take into account. There's also, team strategists. If anything, I don't know. If anything, you have the aggressive driving, but that's
that stands out to me as someone, I cover Formula One week in, week out for this podcast, and then I dip into IndyCar for big events. And so, yeah, the Formula One rule of you're allowed to make one move across the track. The driving standards is something that I want to bring up on this podcast, because I feel like I could live without the weaving. It's not the weaving. It's just like how much they go across the white line and pit entry and all. So I'm like, oh my goodness. But that's part of the entertainment. But as a fan coming into it, I could kind of live without it. I know why it's there.
I mean, we're not NASCAR. IndyCar is not NASCAR. Let's be real there. I know. No, but joking aside, that's the nature of just oval racing. That is, I know, broken record here, but that is the oval. That is what the oval is. And you either are going to go for it and you're going to like it and you're going to be aggressive. Santino once again, boasted about how we went on the grass. And he was like, I went on the grass like twice. Pato went on the grass. And guess what? He ended up in the wall. It's a little bit more complicated than just saying, oh, well, what should we do? Do we need to make new rules? Do we need to change the cars? What are safety devices? But we've done all of that, right? We've done all of that. And the tires are good. And this is good. But what more can you do when it is something so unique like the oval and you have drivers who are going all out like that, you know?
I'm okay with it, actually. You know, at the end of the day, the drivers sign up for it. If they do what they feel is right. You know, would you have had this in the days of Mario Andretti, AJ Foyt, Parnelli Jones? Probably not. But they knew they were taking a lot more risks. They knew what happened if it went wrong. They'd still do what was necessary to win, but they'd just do their craft a different way. And I think these days, people still do what it takes. And at the moment, the way that the rules are set up, the way you keep your position in on the last lap of the Indy 500 is to weave like hell on the straight, into the car, almost come into the pits. It looks incredibly dramatic when you look at the head-on shot. When you're watching from a different perspective, the cars aren't overlapping at these times when they're weaving from side to side. So as soon as someone gets alongside, they stop. They go in a straight. The spotter's telling them all the time. So it's not quite as crazy as it probably looks on the TV. But we still have to remember that open wheel super speedway oval racing, it is the most dangerous form of elite motorsport on four wheels that there is. I mean, rallying is the only thing that comes close because you don't know what you're going to hit. In IndyCar, you do know what you're going to hit most of the time. And without overly dramatizing it, you know, they can only contain the consequences. They can't really manage the consequences of when it goes wrong, as we saw with Kyle Kirkwood's wheel. He almost can't build a fence high enough to deal with that wheel flying that high. You just don't know how far it could go. If that wheel went off at a different angle, it would probably fly even higher or further, or, you know. So there's only measures you can do to contain stuff rather than manage it. And this, you know, Mandy made a great point about the IndyCar AMR safety team, a fantastic group of people. They do an amazing job. They've absolutely saved lives, as have safer barriers, as have hands devices. You know, they've all done fantastic, been great innovations that have literally saved lives. But as we saw with Stefan Wilson's shunt, you know, you can still get hurt driving these cars very, very easily. And that was just a misunderstanding. You know, Mandy, you spoke to Robbie Wickens at Laguna Seca. You can see for yourself what the consequences of getting it wrong on a high-speed oval are. So it's still the most dangerous form of four-wheel motorsport I think there is on the planet.
Before we sign off, last word. I'll give both of you a last word on any kind of winners and losers that we haven't mentioned so far. We haven't really talked about Andretti. Haven't talked too much about McLaren. A few long faces there. Zach Brown was in the US rather than in Monaco. He's seen enough fancy yachts bobbing up and down in his lifetime. So yeah, heartbreak.
Or McLaren struggling to score a point.
Yeah, I mean, there weren't any broken bits of carbon fiber heading back from Monaco, but there was plenty of bits to repair from the Arrow McLarens. Charles, finish off with you. Any sort of highlights and lowlights that we haven't mentioned so far that stood out to you?
Oh, plenty, really. I mean, yeah, Arrow McLaren's a great place to start. Hugely impressive performance. They had four cars that were fast across the 2 weeks. They had three cars totally in the mix for victory. Pato, Felix, Alex Rossi just seems to be a little bit off it, but the other two guys were so unlucky. The driver who stood out for me, Alex Palou. I mean, my word, that pole position. I was going to say lap because obviously it's over four laps, but it was really his first lap that got him the pole, was just utterly sensational. And he was driving flawlessly this weekend yet again. He got hosed in the pit lane for no reason of his own, basically. You know, last time he had to take emergency service last year, he came back from last to ninth. This year he came from virtually last to fourth. You know, fantastic drive, just got taken out by Rinus VK in the pit lane. But yeah, so many great performances out there, and then a few misses as well. You know, Will Power, He was the best placed Penske car on the grid. He was the best placed car for much of the race until Joseph overtook him. And then he had a weight jacker failed. He had a terrible restart at one point. Then he ended up hitting the wall and needed suspension repairs. So yeah, again, it just goes to show the fine margins of the Indy 500. You've got these fantastic races. Everyone says it's the best field ever, and it just keeps getting stronger and stronger. And this is why I do feel very positive about the IndyCar series, that it can keep making strides forwards. And when it puts on such a great show, and I thought Danica Patrick made an amazing point in the broadcast when she said that when she went to Motegi to win the race over in Japan, when they stamped her passport, it didn't say racing driver, didn't say sportsman, it said entertainer. And I think the Indy 500 really, really just proves that they really are, you know, the sports entertainers.
There's so much quality on the grid, whether it's multiple winners of that race like Castro Neves and Sato and Ericsson. Again, people might know that from the different series they've raced in. But just it just feels like it's a very, very high bar of drivers at the moment and only getting better. Mandy, yep. Last word with you. Any highlights and lowlights that we haven't had time for? We could do this for a couple of hours, this podcast, but we had to cover some stuff off.
I know.
Who do you want to mention?
Well, okay. I'll try to mention the ones Charles did real quick because I know. Santino, PTO. That was a winner. The curse of the Ray Hall team.
It's terrible.
The curse. Yeah. It was terrible. Cursed. It was almost like Graham, and then Graham getting cursed again, and the Chevy. Mm. It's like this. Yeah, that was terrible. And don't get me started on Catherine. Catherine? I mean,
just I'd fill our listeners in on some lowlights and your highlights of what happened there.
Bump day was crazy. Watching our teammates, you know, fighting it out for bump day. The Stefan Wilson thing, the Steph thing, having that happen, and then having car issues again where she has to retire early. And not only that, but doing that just to make a comeback where this opportunity truly meant everything to her and was excited to do it. And it just wasn't what she, I mean, everything was just insane for her. The whole process of month of May and is ready to, yes, go have tequila. And when I talked to her, she was definitely like, this is bonkers. This is bonkers. Like this whole, all of this has been absolutely bonkers. And it has been for her. And I feel for her. So, and all she wants to do is just go on with her life and put this, you know, it's like, yeah. So that was probably the lowest light too, I think, that we skipped. But that's it. That Ray Hall team just didn't, yeah. That was the lowest, I think. I don't know. Do we get any lower than a whole team? Just
Not being there. Not being on the pace at all. Yeah.
Nope. And then going through a bump day where,
One driver bumped another from the same team. And yeah,
exactly.
You know, just going back to Catherine, she was the highlight of that team. The way she out-qualified all her teammates, who were all regulars. She hadn't done the Indy 500 for 10 years. 10 years.
Absolutely
amazing.
And yeah, she did tell me how she goes, it's brutal. It was absolutely brutal watching two teammates. And then not only that, but coming in as like, you know, the new person, because, you know, she's not the regular person on the team, regular teammate. And then to have to watch that, it's like, it's brutal. And then let's just make it even more dramatic. And then here's this incident. And then, yes.
Well, there we go. We better call it a day there. There we go. We better call it a day there. Guys, thank you so much for joining us to discuss what was a brilliant Sunday in motorsport. We really enjoyed watching that one. You can read all of our continued coverage online right now at motorsport.com and autosport.com. Why the Indy 500 fix finish, as some people have said, is well wide of the mark. I think Charles made his very eloquent point earlier on in the podcast, how Newgarden managed to be a thorn in the side of Ericsson's back-to-back double Indy 500 wins, and also just some of the highlights again that we've been writing about and covering from the legendary events. Even Ericsson's unfair and dangerous quote has been dissected online. Lots to read. You can go and read our continued coverage of that. You can also make sure you follow the Autosport podcast for this weekend. We've got some more Le Mans coverage coming up in the next couple of days. We continue our top 10 lists of greatest moments at Le Mans as we count down to the big event itself. And then this weekend back into Formula One with racing around Barcelona. We'll see if those upgrades the various teams are bringing are any good or not. Thank you for listening, and we'll catch you on the next one.
Podcast Network.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.